You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with The New York Times and WGBH Boston Public Radio.
It's just not normal to exclude women in this day and age. If you arrived on an island and there were only men living there, you wouldn't have to be a medical doctor to wonder about the health of such a community. So why is there such a strong men-only bias in the selection of medical research subjects? A few years ago, researchers at UC Berkeley and Smith College discovered a missing variable in the great majority of medical research on animals to develop better medical practices and new medications. That missing variable was women. In neuroscience alone, researchers conduct male-only studies more than five times as often as studies with female subjects. Now the National Institutes of Health is changing the rules, something way overdue, according to Emily Jacobs, a neuroscientist at Harvard Medical School who studies sex differences and hormonal changes in the brain. Welcome, Emily.
It's great to be here.
The idea that guys-only research, I mean, I know that's an overstatement, would have distorted results in the development of medications, you know, from my perspective, seems like a real no-brainer here. And for a neuroscientist, explain how we got to this situation.
Sure. So, you know, it takes almost a history of science perspective to understand why this status quo of using, of relying exclusively on male animals came into place, and really why today we're only now beginning to address that problem. I think it has to do with the fact that women really haven't had a voice in basic science, and in my field, in neuroscience, which is, you know, quite new. It's been dominated by male researchers, and because of that, I think the issue of questioning what the sex of the lab animal that you use in your studies just wasn't ever at the forefront. So I don't think it was a bias that was sort of intentional. It was almost just the default, the status quo, and no one really questioned why that might be a problem until now.
I guess it's easier for me to understand why a neuroscientist in the sort of old boys club there at Harvard and, you know, anywhere else, MIT, would prefer a male squash partner, okay, at the athletic club there on campus. But why you would consider it normal to only choose experimental animals, that just seems completely, like, wrong.
Yeah, it's complicated. I mean, I think the argument tends to be twofold. One, that it's easier to house male animals, it's cheaper. And this idea of women having this pesky thing called the estrous cycle or menstrual cycle in humans, and having to control for that variability makes the basic science research infinitely more difficult. That was the argument all along. But it turns out that's just not true. So Irv Zucker at UC Berkeley published a beautiful seminal paper, series of papers, and his most recent one addressed that fact explicitly. So he looked at variability between men and women at a whole number of different endpoints. So looking at the cellular level, molecular level, physiological level, and behavioral level, and just said, what's the variability like between the male and female mice? And it turned out that there was not a single endpoint in which the females were more variable. And in fact, there were several endpoints in which the men, the male animals, were more variable. So it really kind of debunked that whole theory. So there's really just no good excuse now for why we can't include males and females in basic preclinical research. I think that the time has come to change that status quo.
And again, being something of the boor here, the idea that menstrual variability would affect, you know, outward behavior or outward outcomes, you know, is an issue that we kind of dispensed with in the driver's license age when we decided that, in fact, women were just fine as drivers, you know, back in the 1940s. I guess, you know, if you're a grad student and you go to your professor and say, my experiment is going to be needlessly complex if I use species that have certain cycles in them, you'd probably get a lower grade as a result of that. But if you apply for a grant and say only male experimental subjects, it's perfectly fine?
It was until today, until the announcement by the NIH that there is going to be a fundamental shift in policies that now require the inclusion of both sexes in preclinical research. So when a researcher applies for a grant, they have to have an inclusion plan that includes both sexes. And if they don't, there has to be a justification. There's also new funding initiatives that are being rolled out that really help apply this sex and gender lens to already funded NIH research. So it's a supplemental grant so that they can basically, you know, help encourage researchers who are already doing really important science to include female groups so that they can test for potential sex differences that might have profound effects at the level of human health. And that's really the crux of this whole issue, is that, you know, an over-reliance on male animals in preclinical basic research has the potential of obscuring sex differences that could guide clinical studies in humans. And what's at stake is not just the overall health of women, but I would argue really the integrity of medical research as a whole, and the health of the economy, which we know is overburdened by the enormous cost of fighting disease. And if we're obscuring sex differences that might help us, you know, tailor our treatments better, then, you know, this issue just has profound effects at all levels of analysis.
I saw a presentation a few years ago which suggested that the time that you give chemotherapy medication can have a crucial effect on how it's absorbed and its efficacy, and that is an issue that was never studied until very, very recently. So this is just the kind of thing that will have scientific implications. Can you name one possible scientific implication that has been a harm as a result of male-only experimental subjects?
Sure. I mean, the classic example given is with Ambien. So it's a medication that was prescribed in the same dose, in the same way for men and women. And it turned out that women were reporting, you know, showing up at emergency rooms, you know, in droves because they were over-medicated. And now that, you know, the FDA has cut the recommended dose by half because of side effects that were just quite frankly obscured because of that initial animal and clinical testing relying on the male model.
So it's really a brave new world here as a result of this decision and the possibilities going forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important to note that there's a lot of ways in which men and women don't differ, and it's important to know the scope of that. But it's also critical to know how we do differ, and to sort of take that into account when we're trying to study the health and disease of the entire population.
Emily Jacobs is a neuroscientist at the Harvard Medical School, studies sex differences and hormonal changes in the brain, talking about the decision on the part of the National Institutes of Health to change grant specifications to require gender inclusion. Thanks, Emily.
Thanks.
Support for The Takeaway comes from TiVo. No need to switch TV inputs, remotes, or interfaces to access cable TV and streaming from Netflix and Hulu Plus. Learn more at TiVo.com.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.